Hey, folks, welcome to the Shitstorm Podcast with Mark and Mike. I'm Mark.
I'm Mike.
Yes, podcast that we talk about the shitstorm of life events and information that is flung at each and every one of us every day, from the media, from politics, to just plain old living. It's a hard one, man. So here we dig deep to uncover a few golden nuggets from this chaos, this journey of we call life, man. And today we're going to have an interesting one. Today is a topic that Mike wants to get into wholeheartedly. We're talking about atheism versus theism. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, versus. It's not so much versus. Yeah, and it's also deism, agnosticism. In other words, a different thing.
Basically, atheism versus religion.
But you can. That's probably a better way, more or less, of saying it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, you're not going to get much of an argument from on the other side about this one from me, because I wouldn't say I'm a religious person. I actually would tell you I'm really not a religious person. I was born religion. You know, I was born from Catholic Church, but I never ever kind of grabbed hold of it. I had to go through all of the, probably like most people did when you're a Catholic, you have to go through all the, you know, go through Catholic school, you know, after school, catechism. You get confirmed, you know, your communion, which is opposite way around, communion first, then confirmation. And, you know, I just went through the motions and did it and really didn't understand the reason for doing it and heard all the stories. And my mom would always tell, you know, she pushed that, and we didn't go to church every Sunday, you know, we went on the holidays. And to me, going to church on the holidays was like, oh, okay, you got to go for this 1 hour, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, kind of now I'm remembering when my mom passed away and we're in the church, and I had so much problems with the sermon. First of all, it seemed like the priest just, you know, was half there and barely into it. And, you know, talking about, well, you know, the person, you commit sins and blah, blah, blah. And talking like, you know, my mom was a sinner and all this stuff, you know, because in God's eyes, we're all sinners. It wasn't until apparently the idea is that Jesus came and redeemed us all. And I was like, I don't buy this. I never really did. I didn't really ever buy the religion aspect of things. But I understand, I'm talking to many people, there's a lot of good that can come from it. But I'm going to let you kind of go into your philosophy, your stand, and what you think about these two issues.
Okay, thank you. So a couple things. I was raised in a very conservative, very Christian Lutheran Protestant household. And it was foisted upon me, and I was told to accept Jesus and God like a child. And I was told that there is no other truth than this particular truth. And at a very early age, it occurred to me that this can't possibly be true. And so when I say at a very early age, I'm talking about 4 or 5 years old. And why would that be? Well, my father died when I was 2, left my mother, I wouldn't say destitute, but pretty close. 5 kids. I have a brother and sister who are less than a year younger than me. So we're what they used to call Irish triplets, usually Irish twins. I'm only 10 months older than they are. I have an older brother who's a year older and an older sister who's a year older than him. And I was kind of wondering one time, you know, what – I remember wondering, why would my father be gone? What possible reason? I used to ask my mother that question, and she would say things like, it's God's will. I'm like, okay. But why would God – want to have you marry him, just have all these kids so that you could then be alone and destitute? And she said, well, God wanted you to be born. Okay. Seems like if God is all-knowing and all-powerful, there was a better way to do it. He could have gone poof, or he could have let my father live, or he could have done a dozen other things, a million other things, if he's all-powerful and all-knowing, to make sure that I was born. So then when my mother remarried, and married a man who is a vicious, mean person who liked to throw me downstairs, put me in closets, things like that. And I'd ask my mother. And it was also God's will. I said, really? Really, really? So I'm 7, getting thrown down a flight of stairs. And God wants me to break an arm. Well, fuck. Really? Why didn't you just break my arm and save me the bruises and concussion? I mean, you know, and it became apparently ludicrous and stupid. If this God is so loving and merciful, why does he allow young kids to be beaten? Why does he allow cancer? Why does he allow SIDS? Why does he allow people to be born, die 3 months later in agony? Why does he allow concentration camps? Why does he allow all this other stuff, right? If it's his will, well, then first of all, he's either a really mean fucking God, or it isn't really his will, because if it were, then there would be no sins like this in the world. So this is the backdrop of how I started thinking about this stuff. So then I was in my mother worked for the church. We used to go to church services every Sunday from 7:30. We'd leave our house until all the different churches, there were usually three of them on a Sunday, and we would get home about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. When I finally knew there was no God is because my mother used to put sauerkraut and pig's feet in a pressure cooker, turn it on, and let it pressure cook until we got home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And this gruel that came out, which was an inedible slop. If there was a God, he wouldn't allow this to happen. You couldn't feed that to anybody. So, I mean,
they probably didn't even feed that in the gulag.
No, probably. I mean, this stuff, it wasn't even recognizable as food, just to be clear.
It's funny, at that age, you're like, there's no way God would allow me to eat this in eat all this. His infinite wisdom. This is not God. That's funny.
No, it was a pig's foot bone with shreds of stuff
oh
on
my
it.
God. I don't think, you know, for someone who was born in a religious household, you just mom was not very good at expressing what God is, because some people would have not maybe done it that way. I don't know, but it sounds like you had a very bad kind of – nothing to say against your mom, but I don't think she –
Oh, no. There's nothing, very little good to say. I mean, when you allow my stepfather to throw me down the stairs while you're standing next to me and saying, well, God says that a wife must obey her husband. Really? Yeah. Okay. Well, good, but – that's not really a God I want to
Well,
hang
that
out
sounds
with.
Like she was someone who was making excuses for things without having appropriate answers for. But it was your introduction to what religion at the time,
right? But it was
correct?
Blind faith, and yeah. So I immediately said, I am not going to be blindly faithful to this nonsense, right? So then I went through all the catechism classes, and I remember asking my pastor when I was in the seventh grade. I said, Pastor Burrow, can God do anything? He said, yes. I said, okay, can he make a rock so large he can't lift it? Pastor Burrow looked at me, sent me to the principal's office where I got punished. My mother came down. I spent the rest of the day, like 5 hours more there. So when I got home, I could be promptly punished corporeally. I'm like, I just thought I was asking a question. And I was like, I wasn't trying to stump anybody, but I said, if he can do anything, then he can make a rock so large he can't lift it. Then he either can make the rock and can't lift it, or he can't make the rock. So he can't possibly do everything. It's a non sequitur. But that was apparently the wrong question to ask.
You probably would have had to pose that question to a Zen monk. Can I clap my hand? Can I clap one hand?
Right.
What noise does it make if I clap one hand? Yeah, does it make a sound? If a tree falls in a forest, does anyone hear it?
I don't know. Does a pope shit in the woods? Yeah. I don't know.
you're giving your teachers Zen cones at a young age, they punished you for it. That's funny.
Oh, they punished me like crazy. In fact, I remember it was the Saturday before I was going to get confirmed. I was in eighth grade. It was the confirmation day, and I remember going in, and they had a morning service and an afternoon service, and I was going to be I don't know where I was, somewhere M in the middle of the afternoon service, and I did something to get in trouble, some question or something. And so they said, we're not going to confirm Mike. They told my mother this. They were not going to confirm me. And I'm like, yay, okay, good. I'm happy with that.
Fine.
I'm like, I was doing handstands and shit. And she was mad and mad. And she goes, what can I do to make sure you confirm him? And they said, well, tomorrow morning, he's got to be the first speaker at the 8 o'clock service. And it was on the radio. This was my one time on the radio. It was some Christian radio station in Rochester, Michigan. I'm like, okay, well, shit. So what do I do now? And I was really debating whether I was going to go off and talk about Satanology and shit like that. But I decided that was probably not the best thing.
Especially if you don't want to embarrass your mother too.
Oh, I didn't care about that. I just wanted to make sure I made 14. So, and so I did that and I got confirmed. And so we got our dutiful service. And in the Lutheran church, you take a wafer in your mouth and the pastor puts a hand on your head and sips this wine. And I'm looking in the wine and it was a chalice. It wasn't individual cups. And that looked like things like floaties. I'm like, I'm not drinking that. You got to be out of your mind. Because I don't know who was so sipping
Mike,
on this.
How old are you? 9 years old? 13. You're already OCD. Okay. OCD.
Well, but, I'm looking at like, shit, there's stuff floating in there. What if I get that? I don't know what it is. And so I wouldn't drink it. And so the pastor then, you know, basically insisted. He put it in my mouth.
Ooh.
And it was terrible, right? Terrible. And so then he told my mother and stepfather, and I was punished again. And so the very next week, and this is the last time I've ever had communion in my life, I was standing in this line. I don't know how they do it in the Catholic Church, but here you got a guy stand at the row empties out for all the congregants are going to partake in communion and whatever, and I'm standing. And so they do like three or four rows, so it comes back, and then you kind of march up there. And I was standing behind this lady. And she was wearing a pair of what I guess you would call high-heeled clogs. And she had so much perfume on, it made my eyes sting. And so I was standing behind her, and then I started chuckling to myself. So as we were walking forward, when she picked up her right foot, I went, boom, with my foot and kicked her shoe. And I hit it, and it went all the way up to the pastor. And went into the altar area and landed. And I was laughing my ass off. And she was, I guess, embarrassed, which I feel bad for. And she walked off. And when they came to me and were supposed to put his hand on my head and offer me the communion, he just shook his head and said no. So I had to leave. And that's my entire communion experience. The first time I had to drink goobers and the second time I was kicked out of the altar.
Man, you're a hellion. Okay.
But I still couldn't. I'm sorry, I'm going on a monologue a bit, but I still couldn't bring myself to admit that there was no Jesus Christ. I guess that was put in me early enough. There was no God that I just couldn't accept it. But I'm also, like I said before, I'm a scientist. I'm a mathematician, right? And I can explain a lot of things in mathematics, but nothing in religion. I remember thinking, okay, so a snake convinced Eve to eat an apple. They put every kind of animal on an ark, and it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, and it made the water level double and rise. Well, if that's the case, it would have diluted the salinity in the oceans by 50%, which would have killed all the marine life in the oceans. So how exactly did they manage not to do that? Second of all, I wasn't sure how the penguins got to Turkey, which is where the ark presumably was. I couldn't figure out, if you have two of every animal, what'd you feed them? Because if you fed them animals on the ark, they're going to starve to fucking death. And if you didn't, that means you'd have rancid meat sitting there that would stink the place up and make everybody sick. What did you do with the feces? Like, just the practical questions of, like, how's that even possible? You got a bird, a dove. The dove flies away. What about all the other fucking birds? Where are the parakeets? Where are the goddamn parrots? You know?
Right. Well, I mean, so let's move into the global then.
Okay, so then this stuff can't be true, right?
Well, yeah, because you're asking. This is the big problem I always had with religion. It's asking you, or it's requiring you to have a leap of faith, which means you're suspending your rational mind that all this stuff has taken place, and it always has been the problem with religion for me as well, that it doesn't. It, you know, on inspection, when you ask simple questions, it just doesn't hold up.
That's why they say you got to accept like a child.
Correct. Well, accept like a child, which is why I always felt like religion is always, you know, not
dumb yourself down.
Am I calm myself down? What?
No. Religion is dumb yourself down.
Well, I was going to bring up the term opiate for the masses. As a friend of mine said, you know, and she didn't mean it this way because she goes to church. It's like morality for dummies kind of thing, you know, book. And I was like, that's actually more correct than you probably think. You know, I always felt that I had this discussion with a friend of mine who's very religious, and maybe you can answer this question for me. And I don't know. My theory has always been like, look, you know, the problem, you know, is these books have been around for thousands of years. And so when the books came out or were written or when by whomever they were written by, that you're talking about there were two types of people in the world at the time. We didn't have public education. You know, you had people who ruled and people who were rulers. And how were you going to kind of keep your other people in line? Well, you create stories. You create these stories that people can relate to, because you can't give them metaphysical information. You can't give them...
They didn't have it to give.
They didn't have it to give. So what do? You put it in terms of family, of, you know... help me out here, Michael, right? You create stories that are just simplistic, right?
Basically, you create myths. Christianity doesn't like to call them myths. But if you look at Greek and Roman and Indian and Zoroastrian and every other Aztec religion, there's myths. There's myths. Oftentimes, each god has their own specific myth to explain some phenomenon. Christianity became a monotheistic religion along with Judaism and Islam. And then, but Christianity had a particular problem with it, so they became a Trinity type religion, right? You had to split it into three. And each one of those Trinity legs has its own set of myths associated with them. And the reason that the myths work, and have worked for all religions in history, is it gave power to someone who knows the truth, a priest or a shaman or whomever, and imparts that wisdom on everybody else and gives them guidance on how they can live their life to satisfy, to sate this particular deity, whether it's a single deity, a trinity, or a thousand deities of some kind. And so that's why they did it, and it works, and it worked, and it still works. And to this day, even though the Catholic Church is being rocked by pedophilia scandals, people still sign up and say, this is the truth. That's just flawed people.
Well, it's believing hook, line, and sinker, which I mean, and you just mentioned these other religions. And if you look at the history of religion and their religion, they all have a very similarity about it.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, in fact, it's funny. I tell people every single human being on the planet is an atheist by definition. Now, you may believe in your God, but every other god that's ever been invented, you don't believe in. So from a Roman mythology point of view, you're an atheist. From a Shinto point of view, you're an atheist. From an Indian religion point of view, Hindu religion point of view, you're an atheist, unless you happen to be Hindu, right? So you just – and then people say, well, no, but
well,
this
I don't know if
is...
that's correct. If you're – you know, if a Hindu looks at a Catholic, goes, oh, there's one of those Catholics, or there's one of those
but
Jews,
do they believe in the Catholic God? If they don't, they're an atheist. That's what atheism means. You don't believe in the
correct
deity.
But you're saying that all religions look at all other people. If they believe in their God,
then they don't believe in yours, because their gods
are. You're not an atheist from the point of view of someone else who's a religious person.
My point is, everybody has the capacity to not believe in gods. Everybody does. There are gods that have been created throughout history that you don't believe in, whether you believe in the Christian God or not.
I don't know. Do I believe in Shiva? Do I believe in...
Would you pray to Shiva and hopefully Shiva is going to bless your family? If you do, then you can't be a Christian because they restrict it. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry.
Well, yeah. So then this is the thing about religion that is the problem with it. It doesn't – you're talking about this dogma, this ancient, you know, these 1,000-year-old stories that just keep getting –
2,000, 3,000.
2,000, 3,000. Yeah, whatever. Long. I'm saying 1,000 for lack of a better word. A bit of time frame is that you're going through life with all of these stories that just don't change, don't update, and they're always the same. And it holds, I think, people in this stasis of evolution.
Of course it does, because once you make everybody believe that they have to accept these stories without question, and then they do. I mean, let's face it, the Bible, not just the Bible, I'm picking on the Bible, but the Torah, any ancient religious text, any. Including up into the Book of Mormon, which was written in 1827, but it still suffers from this same problem. Any religious text was written by people who have less scientific knowledge than the average second grader in the United States today. Less. Yet they're supposedly purporting the truths of the universe. They can't even explain that the Earth revolved around the sun for another 1,630 years. And yet we're supposed to listen to this shit?
Well, the thing is that – and I'm going to give religion its due here, because you know, there are people that I listen to who are very religious, and they are sane. They are intelligent people. And there's things that religion helps identify an answer that science can't, you know? And it's
no.
There is
no.
Hold on.
No.
There, yeah. I mean, look.
No.
You're
no.
you're talking about. I'm playing devil's. I'm not. I don't want to use the word devil's advocate. But that's what I'm doing here. So the when you're saying yeah, you, they're written by people who had the second grade education of
no, not even a
not
second
even
grade
of science. You know, but they might have information about what's the meaning of your existence on this planet, what you as a human being, how to. You know, self-actualized to some degree. And well, there are those stories and those elements that people refer to because it offers a transcendent meaning that we all intuitively feel there's something greater than just our own existence. And whether – and I think – and I had this discussion with a friend of mine yesterday that it does get perverted within all of the – I'm going to say the muck and the story of all religions. But it's the it's they do have the cornerstone on this – spiritual aspect of our lives that we that science can't quite give us. It tries to, but it doesn't satisfy. And it's one
well,
of
but again, it doesn't need to because the question is, you believe or someone believes because of a lacking of, or a doubt or a fear in themselves, but they accept without proof that there's something transcendental and greater. That doesn't make it true. Number one, it just makes them feel like it's true. So they can hold on to something. It's like hoping and praying that the Detroit Lions score another touchdown before, right? The end of the game. Hoping and praying. I mean, think about it this way. A couple of points here I want to make. People say, why don't you pray? Pray for this. I said, okay, well, oh, that's what I got in trouble from when I was – that's why I was not going to be confirmed. Because I remember my teacher, we were going on a field trip the next day. Okay, and it was going to be to a local, I think it was the apple orchard. It was in October, so they were doing apple cider and hay rides and all that shit. And Wally Pappenberg, he goes, everybody, pray for rain. I mean, pray for a sunny day tomorrow. We need a sunny day so we can enjoy our field trip. And I raised my hand and I said, Mr. Pappenberg, who was a good friend of my mother's, by the way, I said, but what if the farmers need rain to grow their crops? And so we pray for a sun and the farmers pray for rain. Does God take a poll and the most votes wins? Or does he make the decision on his own? Because if he takes a vote, then that's a ridiculous policy. And if he makes a decision on his own, then praying does no good. And go to the office. But it was just a question. But they couldn't answer it. Praying.
Yeah, but that's like a, but yeah, that example is not talking about what we're addressing.
No,
here
no,
right
no,
now.
No, Mark. My point was addressing your point about it provides a some kind of answer to self-actualization and life after death and all that stuff. It's only because you believe it. People who believe in that stuff believe in prayer and believe in the power of prayer.
Well, it's more that people feel connected to something larger than their own existence.
But that doesn't mean they are. It doesn't mean they are. Just because you believe it doesn't mean you are.
Yeah, right? Well, it's – well, just to believe that you're not. I mean, you're taking the viewpoint
I don't
that,
have any belief. I have no point of view in one
correct,
way or the other. I
you
don't,
can't
there's
project
no belief,
that
on, there's
I
no,
understand, but you can't project that onto someone else who says
– I don't.
I feel
– I never would okay. I say to somebody, your beliefs are incorrect. I've never said that and never will say it. What I've said, however, is your beliefs don't stand up to any kind of rigorous scrutiny or questioning other than at the end of the day, you have to say, well, this is what I believe.
A personal feeling.
Okay. I believe that bunnies are God. Okay. If I believe that, great. Great. That makes it fucking great for me as long as I got bunnies around me. Doesn't make bunnies God.
So I've been listening to very and I think I sent you the link, you know, the Jordan Peterson. And
Yeah.
Right. And it's profound. I mean, it was –
I started listening to it just
two
to be,
parts,
just to...
and it's pithy. It gets pithy, and these guys are just talking on the whole level. I mean, I think you know, I get a lot from Sam Harris listening to him about atheism, and I love his points of views because he astutely points out the pathological effects of these
lying.
Stories, right? Exactly. But Jordan Peterson brings up really, really, really great points. He's like, you know, you take away religion from people. You know, in essence, from I think what I gathered was, you know, you leave the door open for a he thinks it's more dangerous when you take that away because you're taking away, I think, the core of people's essence of living and what it's about, to help define it, and you open it up to nihilism, and you know.
Well, that's
right,
that's
because
actually,
there's no reason for living, and if you have I shouldn't say not for living. That's incorrect. Not living. You just don't have. I think that, like you said, people need that. That they have a supervisory figure that's looking over them at every time.
Right? No. First of all, people can make the argument, and it sounds relatively straightforward, that says if you take away religion, all those bad shit from nihilism to other things are going to happen. How do we know we've never taken away the religion? So there's no anecdotal or empirical evidence that that's true. It's just something people say.
You can't take away religion. People can decide not to be
religious.
That's
what I'm saying. Even in communist societies,
but
like North Korea,
but you could look in throughout the history of the world, people who were not religious and look
there's
at the
very
actions.
Few. There's very few.
I mean, they follow a really. They might follow a like some people say the Nazis. They weren't believe God, but they had their own kind of religion. It was its own separate.
But the thing is, the statement that if you take religion from people, things will descend into chaos or lack of morality or these other things. Okay, so I'm going to get to that in a second, but I would like to make another point. Okay, so, and this isn't mine, this is a Sam Harris point, but if you think about it, so you got India, country of 1.3 billion people or 1.1 billion, whatever the population is. And they suffer tsunamis every year, and hundreds of thousands of people, even if it's tens of thousands of people, die. And by virtue of the fact that they were born in an area of the world that didn't adopt Christianity, according to Christians everywhere, that five-year-old girl who gets killed in a tsunami is going to be live for 5 years in abject poverty, and then spend eternity in hell. Just because her parents had the really bad fucking luck of living in India.
Now, who's saying this? Where does this come from? What do you mean?
That's from the Bible. If you don't accept Jesus Christ as your savior, you rot in hell.
Yeah, look, this is...
Wait, let me finish, because it's important. So if you don't accept Jesus Christ as your savior, you rot in hell. Okay, so I was born in Bangalore, speak a Sindhu. My parents were Hindu. I never knew Jesus Christ, never even knew the guy existed. I lived in poverty for 5 years, got wiped out by a tsunami, and now I'm going to spend the rest of eternity in hell. That seems like a really fucked up dogma. Now, I asked my mother this question as well. She said, well, Mike, that little girl didn't know, had no chance of knowing, so she's saved. I said, okay, then why the fuck did you tell me about Jesus Christ? I'd have been perfectly happy if you hadn't told me, and then I wouldn't have to worry about all this stuff. Right? If you hadn't told me about Jesus, I'm saved. Why go through the motions? Why make me kneel and pray, stand up and do this and get confirmed and sing hymns and all this crap when all you had to do was leave me blissfully in the dark? Or that's actually not true. And if it's, which is unlikely to be true. So if it's not true, then it's a really shit religion.
So, you're bringing in your personal experience. Is that
No. I'm saying, look, if there's two ways of this. Either if you don't accept Jesus Christ as your personal savior, then you are damned for eternity into hell. So this poor little girl is damned, or an aborted fetus for that matter, is damned for eternity into hell. Or there's some kind of escape clause which says, well, you didn't know, you never had the chance to know, so you're good to go. Okay. Well, if it's the former, it's a really shit religion. If it's the latter, then why even talk about it? Just let everybody be blissfully ignorant and let them be saved. Either way, it's a shitty, shitty, shitty existence. It's just terrible. So, I mean, what kind of person wants to subscribe to a religion, any religion, that says if you don't believe it, you're going to be damned to eternity? Even if you never had the chance.
It's more like it's the ones who want to increase its membership would say that.
It's a political party.
No,
it's a political
I get you. I get you. I'm on the side with you on this one. And, you know,
it's a political party. It's a membership game.
I mean, Harris goes into more detail about Islam and everything else that I can't even touch and know what I want to hear. But I agree that the insanity of these stories and – I never bought that we're born in sin. You're already sin. And I always ask them, like, what did I do?
Yeah, what did I do?
I didn't do. I didn't steal anything.
No. And it's like, okay. So I am now condemned to hell because I have rejected in my heart, according to the Christian theology. And by the way, I have studied in college. I have a secondary minor in religious studies, and I was close to a major in it. And then because I got married, I had to leave school. But I am hugely interested in this subject, not because I give two shits about religion, because I don't. I think it's all hogwash, but because most people do. And if you want to understand somebody. And if you're just sitting, and I sit in bars all the time. I want to open a bar in Michigan. We were talking about that earlier. But if you want to know what that person thinks, you listen for a little bit. You find out what they think about God. You know, you listen to what their views on religion are. And you figure out where they're from. If you know their heritage and you know their religious beliefs, you know 90% of what you need to know to talk to that person, either on terms they want to talk about or to – basically screw with them to see how mad you can make them. Both are fun.
True. That's, I get that. You know, I was having this conversation with my friend Kat, and, you know, she's been going to church on Sundays, and I was telling her that we were going to have this podcast about theism and
atheism
and deism. You know, she goes to church because – you know, her and I kind of agree on a lot of the BS of religion, but there's an element of it that people are drawn to it for the fact that there's things that it does teach that are really valuable. And I mean, that's the hard thing to do, because as an intelligent person, you know, you want to. And I said to her, I just think you're smart enough to parse out the BS from what's good. And you're taking on the elements that have given you certain solace, a bit of community, and that's a big one, a sense of community. But she even said, no, there's been instances where a murderer killed the child of a mom, and in court the mom looked at the killer and said, you know what, I'm forgiving you.
And, yeah, fuck that.
I mean, but here's the thing, and it's not like she didn't mourn or didn't hate the guy. It's just that she knew in her heart that she. You know, it's when you have forgiveness for someone, and you know this, and I've done this in my past where people who I was just I completely hated, you just don't want to walk around with hate in your life. I mean, that's a valuable tool to say, you know what, I forgive you for things you've
done.
But
it doesn't require religion to do so. I understand
doesn't require it, but religion is the one that's actually got the best marketing plan for it.
But I've raised four kids. My wife and I are both staunch atheists forever. I mean, as long as I've known my wife and as long as she knew me. And you know what? We have four super decent contributing members, honest society people. And never once, except for a funeral or wedding, and mostly funerals, did we go to church. Never once stepped inside. I wouldn't let – when my kids had sleepovers on a Saturday night and people say, we're going to church in the morning or we're going to temple in the morning, I'd be like, great. But make sure you drop Devin or Tegan or whomever off before you go. And they're like, well, we're just going to take her. I said, no, you're not. You got to understand. That is against what I believe. And I'm not going to let you, and my wife do. And we're not going to let you do that. What can it hurt? Well, first of all, it's not really your decision to decide what it's going to hurt or not. But more importantly, I've asked you. And if you don't agree to this, then I'm not going to let Devin sleep over, to pick on Devin for a moment. And my kids have zero qualms with morality. My kids have zero qualms with community. My kids have zero qualms with being part of a larger society. If I look at religion, I look at the danger, the destruction, the justification of slavery, the manifest destiny that gave a foundation to destroying the lives of millions of Native Americans and stealing their lands. I look at the subjugation of women for thousands and thousands of years.
And in some religions, it's still going on completely.
And so
right
tell
now.
Me exactly how these
Yes.
religions give a moral fiber, a moral backbone.
Yeah, no. I
Take homosexuality. People say
correct.
In the Bible.
Correct.
They say in the Bible it's against homosexuality. I say, okay.
I mean, it took time for the Catholic Church to finally be okay with that. I mean, they had to do that. And that's the thing with the discussion gets into if you watch it where they talk about that. It doesn't get updated. And because it's kind of locked in this kind of deified version that it was written by God and it can't be changed.
Well, but it's even a little bit more basic. Okay, the Bible says it's bad to be a homosexual, apparently. And that's because one verse where as somebody laid with man – doesn't say anything about women, by the way, just to be clear. But that's bad. However, and I asked this person, I said, okay. But so the Bible says homosexuality is bad. So what I really want to know is – and I got this from the West Wing. I said, how much should I sell Devin for? Because it says in the Bible that I should sell my daughters at a certain age, and the more they're educated and can do, the more I get for them. And I said, or the bigger question I have is, do my brothers and I have to stone my mother because she wore clothes made from two different cloths, or do I do it myself? Because that's a sin. And God forbid that she grew corn next to green beans in her garden because you can't grow different crops side by side.
Right. Well,
so I'm in a conundrum of what to do. These moral questions, this moral clarity of owning slaves and beating women and selling children and stoning people who commit these, that moral clarity somehow escapes me, even though I'm an atheist.
Well, yeah.
And I think
and
those
so
things
some
are
people,
bad.
And some and as I said to my friend, I brought up some of those same points. She's like, well, you know, the New Testament kind of cleared a lot of all that stuff. And that's what I mean. I'm like, well, and so then the New Testament came in and cleared off all the stuff that was
– not all of it, just some of it.
Well, you know, no, it's no more stoning and there's really no more slave ownership in the New Testament.
Slave ownership is justified by the New Testament. Bullshit. That is absolutely untrue.
I mean, is it really? I don't
it is absolutely
that.
Justified by – slaves should obey their masters. No, it's absolutely
okay. – All right. Well, I don't know anymore. Like I said, I've been out of that realm for a
but
long time.
But that moral clarity that's taught by religion – somehow escapes me because I must not be very smart, but I'm pretty sure.
Well, here's the thing.
I'm comfortable in my life not owning slaves. I'm pretty sure I'm good with it.
I think the aspect that her and I think many people do take is they'll concentrate on the areas that make one feel very good. You know, she feels like she's had a lot of positive things happen in life because she started going to church. You know, it kind of makes her feel good. You know, she's a little, you know, she got a book deal and, you know, things are flowing. They got a nice place. And she's
so
like,
all because
– all because she found a little bit more of a purpose and reason for doing things. And I think that is what kind of people gravitate towards religion for because you just realize, you know, in this chaos of this journey that we call life, Michael, that we – on this shitstorm because life is a shitstorm, we say, that religion gives certain people meaning. Yeah, I mean, if you parse into the details of it, like you just said, and go back, you know, it's destructive. It's it doesn't follow humanistic protocols that we adhere to in our modern society. So, but if you're able to go to church on a Sunday, if you want, and you're concentrating and you focus on the things that it does give, so. Is it a bad thing? I don't know. I mean, I'm with you on this one. I don't go to church. I don't get it because
no. But let me say this. Okay, joining any group that gives you meaning and focus, whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous, it could be a support group for grieving widows,
right?
Widowers. It could be any group at all. Is good if it makes you feel better and gives you purpose. If that group gives you a stage to therefore hate people, like that goddamn video of this Christian missionary in Uganda yelling at the black person behind the desk who is from Uganda because he hated Jesus. And he started hitting him and hating
really?
Him and saying,
oh, man.
Oh, yeah. No. But if your particular group gets white supremacists, their group gives them a reason to hate other people. If that's your group, that group is shit. So if your group says, oh, we're all God-fearing, God-loving guys, God be to Jesus, and then on the other hand, yeah, but the fucking Jews who don't love Jesus, well, we got to do something about that.
Yeah. Well, see, that's where the danger of religion, it can breed this fundamentalism that can come out of it.
It doesn't breed it. It enables it. It actually thrives in it. What do you call evangelicals in the United States?
Politicians.
Yeah, but they thrive. Right. But they thrive in this intolerance. That's how they make their money.
It's amazing. These evangelicals will go in there, go into politics and say no marijuana on the nation. But yet, when it comes to bombing another country that's not a Christian,
good to go.
Good to go.
By the way, you know, Bill Clinton had got a blowjob, and we need to impeach his ass. Donald Trump, who's had three wives, five kids from three different wives, cheated on each of his wives while they were pregnant, paid off porn stars, paid off Playboy models, grabs women in the genitalia, brags about it.
Okay, so that's a good point. So that's a good point, Michael.
God sent Trump to be president. Yay.
So this is a good point to ask you a question then on this. So religion, like you just said, like, you know, we as human beings, or men, or even just women, religion helps. I'm trying to parse my thoughts here in this one. So yeah, example, you just said Donald Trump, you know, how many wives and kids. And some people would say, well, what religion does is it gives you that compass in life to direct it towards one woman, you know, one woman, have a family. And, you know, they're big on that. They're big on the of keeping human beings sort of corralled so they don't get out of hand, that they're not immoral, that they have multiple wives and kids all over the place.
So me, as an atheist, been an atheist since I've been before 10 years old. I married one woman for 36 years.
Yeah, but okay, that's you.
No, but wait a second. I didn't. No. That's nonsense. I didn't need some church telling me to hate everybody who wasn't Lutheran. I remember when I was a kid, I couldn't play with Catholic kids. There was a Catholic school right behind the Lutheran school. We couldn't play with the Catholic kids because they worshipped idols. They prayed to saints. Right. Okay. This kid that I want to play kickball with, I can't do because his parents apparently prayed as some idol, Mary fucking, I'm sorry. But no. So that is not a requirement. Religion doesn't give you that.
You can't always say what your experience is for many other people. Think about, so most religion, especially Christianity, they do hit poor neighborhoods, poor people. People who are uneducated. Now, you came from an educated family, so to speak. You were equipped with certain skills at a young age that most people are not. So everyone is equipped differently. And perhaps en masse, this is a kind of a tool to keep people in line, corralled, so they're just not nihilistic and immoral, and gives them a certain sort of direction in life. Now, I'm with you that there might be other ways that we can do this. I lost you actually on my screen.
In the United States, what percentage of people consider themselves Christian? It's like 90 some percent. So that means, in all probability, against all statistical models, what percentage of pedophiles are Christian? What percentage of wife beaters are Christian? What percentage of murderers are Christian? So what percentage of people, what percentage of parents that have homosexual children are Christian? So I don't get that argument in any way, shape, or form. These are horrible people. What percentage of murderers are Christian? It might not be 96%, but it's right with it. In fact, I don't remember the last time I heard about a Jewish murderer, serial killer. I don't know. I can't think of one. So what percentage of politicians who wage war on other countries for natural resources are Christian? Pretty high. Really, really high. So what moral fabric are we deriving from religion when we have pedophilia? Look at the Catholic Church. We have wars waged. We have murders committed. We have serial murders. We have rapes. All these people would probably self-identify, for the most part, as Christian.
Correct. So you're talking about one religion, Christianity.
No, I'm talking about any religion, because it doesn't actually matter.
Like you just said something that was really interesting. You said, how many – serial killers are Jewish.
That's in the United. That's just because in the United States.
Well, let's go to Judaism. I mean, I listen to Ben Shapiro once in a while, and I think this guy's smart and well balanced and adjusted, and he's married and he's devout to his wife, and he loves listening to the Torah and reading the Torah for its wisdom that it brings to him. I mean, and Dennis Prager's the same way, and I admire Dennis Prager for his perspicacity, his keen mind, and he. It's interesting because he had listened to some of the audio with him and Christopher Hitchens on, and Hitch makes some great arguments, and you know, Prager is very smart and knows how to debate an argument, and he just kind of feels like, you know, when you take religion out of the mix, it gets worse. And but he is Jewish, so like you said, maybe there's something in Judaism that creates uplifts and creates a more stable.
Take any religion outside of Christianity and Islam, any religion, pretty much. And the number of wars started and the atrocities committed, and if you take World War II out as a particularly gruesome example of this, because one guy who claimed to be Christian decided to kill and cause the deaths of 60 million people is an anomalous data fact. But this is the other problem I have with Christianity in particular. If Hitler, when he had the gun to his forehead, after he took the cyanide pill but had the gun to his forehead, and he honestly in his heart confesses his crimes and takes responsibility for them and accepts Jesus as his savior, this fucking guy's in heaven. Right? How can that be? But when this little girl gets wiped out by a tsunami, who never heard of Jesus Christ, has to spend eternity in hell. Guy kills 60 million people but says, oh shit, I was wrong. I love Jesus. Good to go. This little girl has no chance. Spends eternity in hell. That kind of imbalance in a religion, that kind of imbalance in morality, there is no moralistic value or lesson that I'm going to get from a religion that actually proposes that as a solution.
But you're bringing up a lot of fundamentalist kind of.
No, this is the basic tenet of Christianity. You accept Jesus Christ in your heart, you are saved.
Yes.
That's John 3:16.
Gotcha. We covered that. But we're talking.
But then you can't. How can you say under any pretext, that Adolf Hitler should be saved and spend eternity in heaven? The second question is, how could this all-knowing, all-powerful God allow Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin or Pol Pot or Kim Jong-un, any of these guys, to even be born? How is that possible?
I'm not answering the question because I don't think that's actually one that's – it's not a plausible question to ask. God,
you can't – if God is all-knowing and all-powerful, he should stop this nonsense.
Well, I mean,
I had a friend who had a three-year-old kid – no, two-year-old kid died of SIDS, all right? Sudden infant death syndrome. The guy said to me, he goes, oh, he's in a better place. And I'm like, oh, really? Why? He goes, well, he's in heaven with God. I said, oh, well, then why don't you just kill yourself? He goes, well, I can't. I said, why not? He goes, the Bible prohibits it. I said, that's pretty convenient because, you know.
A friend of mine told me that during the very dark times, and I don't know if this is true, maybe you have to verify this, that a lot of people were offing themselves. They're pretty much, you know, conditions were so bad. And I don't know what time this was. Maybe it was like 1840s or maybe 1780s where, you know, human beings were just repressed to the point of, I don't want to live anymore. You know, king comes over, takes all your, you know, takes your daughter, takes your property, and right. People offer themselves. And so the Catholic Church was losing their power base. And so then they
– And this is bad.
And someone told me that he goes, what they did was that's when they said that if you commit suicide, you don't go to heaven. You're in purgatory, which they wanted to prevent people from killing themselves. That's where
purgatory is not mentioned in the Bible. Limbo is actually something people don't realize, but limbo is actually part of the Catholic.
I thought limbo was something you did when you go to Haiti. You get the sticks.
The limbo. Yeah, but no, it's actually part of the Catholic doctrine. It's sort of like a place before purgatory. You're in limbo. Purgatory gives you a path out. But this is not mentioned in the Bible.
Do they give you margaritas in limbo?
Hey, then you know what? Well, so I've got a good friend who's Mormon. And the Mormon faith doesn't really believe in hell. They believe in God is an anthropomorphic being who is perfected. And so you want to strive to be like God. And so you have these three worlds. The first one is the one we're in. The second one is a little better. If you live a good life, you go there. And the third one is if you, on the second world, live a really great life, you get to go to the third world and become perfected. And I said, so what I don't really understand is, I said, if I die, do I remember the world that I just came from? He goes, no. I said, okay. I said, but the other question I have is, I like this world. I like sinning. I don't really mind if all I have to do is repeat this over and over like Groundhog Day. Why can't I just do that? I'm choosing to do that. I'm going to drink beer and pick up women and smoke cigarettes if I want and swear up the ass. I said, what's the worst thing that happens to me? I repeat as an unknown entity? Okay, sign me up. But who cares? Why do I want to be perfected when that's just way more work than I want?
Yeah, well, this is some things that that religion does address. It's like how to be a good person in the world. And why waste your time, you know, drinking and smoking and carousing around when you can have a higher order of being? And
Who am I hurting?
You're hurting yourself.
Okay, but that's me.
Yeah, I understand, but it's not.
I want to hurt myself, who cares?
You have that ability to do so, but sometimes
not in Christianity. But I'm not supposed to do that stuff. It's bad.
Right. It's considered a sin to help keep you in line.
Yeah, but I don't
so
want
you
to
don't
be in
do
line.
That because it doesn't. Because it doesn't. It doesn't create a harmonious society by people doing that en masse.
Oh yeah. So the fact that we drink more alcohol than any time in history is creating this harmonious society? The fact that we smoke pot and it's becoming legal is harmonious in history? The fact that we, you know, I don't see why.
Well, that's a whole other thing. I think alcohol in our society, too much of it. We got way too much of it, honestly.
Well, that may be up to you. But the fact is, I enjoy drinking a glass of wine. I enjoy
You don't do it to the point of gluttony. You're not doing it to the point where you're coming home sloppy drunk and you're foregoing your duties to your being a parent and paying your bills. You supply roof for your son
and the boundary has nothing to do with drinking per se.
No, not drinking on
it
its
has
own.
To do with, but you're, it has to do with excessive consumption.
Correct. Excessive consumption. And that's, I think that's, and so, but human
religion doesn't say that you can't, it's bad to drink too much. It says it's bad to drink.
I think they were just covering all bases with that one. So you just don't.
It's a political party.
Yeah.
It's a political party. That's all it
true,
is.
True. True. I'm attempting to create the side to this because there are people who actually can live a harmonious life. When I hear people talk about God, it's more that I hear that they say, I've got Jesus. You know, I remember when I was looking for an apartment recently, as you know, on one of our podcasts, that some people had posted an advertisement. Only take someone who believes in the word of God and has Jesus in their heart. You know, I'm a Jesus lover, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, that ain't going to work for me.
Yeah, no thank you.
No thank you. Yeah, no thank you. But, you know, let's get into then what's the tell me about atheism. Tell me how you think atheism, taking the place of not taking a deist in our lives, would benefit, where do we see the benefits of this?
Okay. So first of all, let me say, because there is a difference between theism, deism, and atheism. And deism basically states that there is a God in the universe, and the God created the universe and basically said, hands off. It's much like when you, you start a fire in your bonfire pit and then you just leave it alone and let it do what it does, right? That's kind of the idea, the spark. And the only argument that you can have for a deist is that right now, the one unanswered question in evolution, otherwise it would be proven, is the first spark. How did the Big Bang get started? And there's different theories about this, but I'm not going to go into them. But so you could say, someone could say, God, poof, snapped his fingers, then happened, and poof, everything else just happens. Sort of like the fire in the bonfire. Okay. So it's not an entirely ridiculous idea, and it's not even one that has many consequences, because believing it just says, hey, I can't explain the Big Bang, so I'm going to accept this. And there is no personal interference of any way, shape, or form of this deity. And okay. But atheism goes a step further, and it says, look, everything has a solution and a natural explanation, whether or not we understand it. It makes no judgments. If you are a Jew a Muslim, if you are a Christian, if you're a Shinto, if you're a Buddhist, it doesn't really make any difference. Because, and I said this before, and I say this, you know, I talked about climate change. Belief is a belief. Belief doesn't change facts. So you can believe that bunnies are God. Doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make him God. But you can believe it if you want to. And so atheism says, look, I'm not going to put beliefs that are unsubstantiated into the vernacular or into the prose that I use. I'm not going to criticize you for doing it, but you're not going to get me on that slope of having an argument about it. You want to believe it? Knock yourself out. Abjectly and immediately takes judgment and selfishness out of the equation, right? Because I'm not a Christian, Christians judge me. I'm not a Jew person, they judge me. I'm not a Muslim, they judge, right? Because you don't accept what they accept is true. And therefore, you are either calling them a liar or you're just uninformed. Me, I, as an atheist, I don't have such an issue. You can believe what you want to believe. I'm not going to judge you on what you believe. So I've automatically taken a level of human interaction on the negative side out because it doesn't matter. There's no effective benefit. Let's talk about morality, and I'd like to have another podcast on morality and atheism.
We may just have to because we're almost at about an hour on this one. That went by fast.
It did. But so I think I'm a moral person. I'm a good person. I try to help people. I've raised 4 kids. I was married for 36 years. I didn't need any Christian, Jewish, Islamic, Shinto, Buddhist, any Hindu theology to tell me what to do on that.
Because so do you think what's good for you is good for the world?
Well, you know, that's one of those things that people have to accept. You ask me what the value of atheism is, what the value of forcing any particular system of thinking on someone is bad. If I'm trying to impose a purely capitalist thinking, a communist thinking, a controlled economy thing, people should be able to decide for themselves.
So here's the thing that Jordan Peterson brought up, and I thought that was really interesting, that where would then people learn the value of these lessons of how to be moral in society and everything that comes with it from being
– so,
where would you get that information from? Because okay, he says that in – but pure education doesn't work, and the literature is clear on that.
Okay, so when I see a documentary of the Nazis slaying Jewish people and forcing them into trenches, covering them with limestone and then filling in the trench, I don't need a book to tell me that's bad. I don't. When I see some poor kid getting the shit kicked out of him and dying because they shoot him in the face, I don't need a book to tell me that's bad. When I see or hear about a woman getting raped, I don't need a book to tell me that's bad.
Well, yeah.
When I got thrown down a flight of stairs by my stepfather and then kicked when I was on the bottom, I didn't need the Bible to tell me.
You didn't answer my question. You just gave me examples from your life.
No, I didn't. What I'm saying is I don't think anybody looking at a slaughter of a group of people in a concentration camp is going to say, yeah, that's good.
Again, how would you train the world without religion?
You don't need – training the world without religion would be a far superior endeavor because you wouldn't create an entire basket of judgmental, hyperbolistic people who believe
– I agree with you again.
Okay, so again,
how do we do this?
Mark. How did I train my kids? I never hit my children. I never spanked them, punished them. I never hit my wife. I never – sometimes everybody yells. But I never, ever, ever showed them in any way, shape, or form that it was okay to do any harm to someone else. And when I did, if I yelled at my wife or this, I would apologize to her and tell my kids why it was wrong. Again, I can only use my experiences, but you ask the question. You lead by example. By example. Right. If I'm unwilling to hit somebody, my kids are unwilling to likely want to hit somebody. If I'm willing to hit somebody, they're likely to be willing to hit somebody. It's by example.
Okay. I like it. So here's what I think. Here's what I think about atheism. I don't think atheism can exist without religion. Like, you need religion to have atheism. I mean, it's the opposite of what that is. It's the complement to it. It's because you have what religion is and you see all of it and you see what it's not, what it does, the destruction it does and the the more harm that it creates from having it around, that atheism is the complement to that. So
I would dispute that, and let me just say why real quickly.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Okay. It's to me that statement is the same thing as saying intelligent design is the other side of the coin from evolution. It's not. Evolution exists with or without Christianity or any other religion. Now, you cannot accept it, and that's okay. Again, you can believe bunnies are God. But the fact is, it exists in its own right. We have already seen that. Quantum physics and quarks and all these things, atoms that we know exist, do not need a contrapositive to exist. So just because atheism says there is no deity, it doesn't require the existence of a belief in a deity to make that statement true.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that for a second. I'm not sure. Right off the bat, I have to think about that, because you're saying it doesn't have to have its opposite. It doesn't have to
have. It does not. There is no opposite. In reality, there is no opposite.
So the fact that you have atheism says we don't believe in a God. Well,
no, it's not a question of belief. The word belief is what
right.
complicates
it's
this.
Not having, so it's not having a belief.
It's, yeah,
it's
there
a
is
belief
no belief.
In something.
No. There's no belief. Belief means accepting something without proof. I see no proof of a God. I see none. Zero.
All right. Why don't we end it there and pick this back up?
Okay. I'd love to. But so, again, I'm trying very hard to make sure if there's anybody out there who's religious that I offended, I apologize. I'm trying to present a fact as I see it.
Yeah, them. I got you. And I'm only challenging you because, like I said in the beginning, I tend to gravitate towards the atheistic
You seem to be
doctrine.
More of a deist.
What's that?
You seem to be more of a deist.
More of a – I would – in actuality, I'm more – I have a spiritual element to me. Whether
right,
I,
which makes you a deist.
Well, I don't believe that there's an actual God. I just feel there's something greater. And I mean, probably because of all the experiences I've had in my life, that I just feel there's something more than just – but it's not an overriding God that sits up there and judges and is guiding and opening paths in my life. I don't know. I mean, there are things I can't explain that happen, coincidences, things that are kind of on a supernatural level that happen to me consistently that I go, there's something else here. I don't know what that is. But it doesn't mean I go to a church or have a God. I mean, I do. I have conversations with myself. I meditate. So does Harris. Harris is big on meditation because it's connecting with yourself. And whether myself is connected to something. And I have to admit, Jordan Peterson said something that was profound. He says, someone asked him, can you prove that prayers exist? And can you prove it? And he went and thought about it. He goes, yes, I can. I can prove a prayer exists. And he said, when you do something bad in your life, whether you're just unhappy with yourself and you sit and you reflect on it, you go, okay, what did I do? What could I have done to make this better in my life? What could I have done? And in time, that answer comes to you. He says, that is your prayer being answered. He's like, you're not praying to the deity. You are talking to yourself, which in itself is a religion. And I get that. I mean, there's intuition we all have that is beyond our rational mind.
Well, but so I would say this to both those statements really boil down to this. Everybody's had a gut feeling that something has happened and you get a bad gut feeling about something. But the truth of the matter is our conscious self is a small fraction of reality. And it's possible without a God. It's entirely possible that our brain, which is doing 90% of the work that we don't understand or process, is letting us know that something happened. Right? Because it's something that affects you. So your brain, which is processing 90% of its work outside of thought, conscious process, is sometimes just putting in a marker or a flag or a waving sign or something. That doesn't mean God is doing it. It means self-preservation, at least
well,
in the way
no,
I think
I
of it.
I would say that your brain is being used to try to interpret these other signals that come in from your gut. Like you say your gut, you know, people say your gut is your second brain because that's your enteric nervous system right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
And so, even artists and writers will say, I don't know where this idea came from. It just came. And the mind picks it up. It's like you just go into the ether. That's so unexplainable. That does that mean there's a God? No, it's you feel like there's an intelligence beyond your just rational mind. And I think the church has subjugated that, and most of the religions have taken that aspect of that feeling of transcendence we have as human beings, and they've corralled it, I say, and have made it this sort of cult. They gave it a sort of a voice and then sort of perverted it. So that's why I think that we are beings that are spiritual beings in this reality. It doesn't mean that it's religious based. It means there's something other there.
Well, so I would like to have a conversation, maybe it's a three-part, about the binary nature of human beings and life, and how you can describe every single human being as a string of his binary digit. And it would be maybe a trillion digits long, but it's not infinite because everybody dies and everybody ends. And by doing so, the basic theory starts with this. When you do something, it's either a number of positive times in your life you've done it or a number of negative times, right? I mean, so odd times rather. So number of cups of coffee you had in your life. You've either had a positive number or a negative number. I mean, an odd number, right? You just have. You've either had 20 million or 20 million and one. And so everything you do in your life, as long as you're alive, has a binary 0-1 associated to it. 0 being odd, 1 being even. And everybody's born, which you're only born once. So that'd be a 1. And everybody dies. And you only die once. So your string, everybody's string of trillion digits begins and ends in 1. And you then have an infinite number of zeros. Not an infinite.
I don't get this. Where are you going
So where I'm going with this is there is no transcendental nature. Once you define the person that way, you can then say...
Whoa, you're saying there's no transcendental experiences we have as human beings?
No, what I'm saying is the ones we have, we don't know about. I guess what I'm saying,
because that's what your mind tries to do, is interpret it. And that's what I think religion attempts to do in greater detail, is interpret
it. But you can do it scientifically, and that's where I'm going with it. And I said it's a much broader, much, much more broad subject. But it allows each person to be identified uniquely, and there is no way that a person can be replicated. So therefore, if that's the case, several things come into play, but it also says that exists forever, whether it's physical or non-physical. Again, I may have gone off on the deep end here. It's actually a fairly rigorous mathematical theory on the existence of life, and that's where I was going. You do not need religion to explain life.
I didn't say that you had to. I'm just saying religion does its best. It's the one that has the cornerstone or the market on putting a lot of that into some kind of contextual basis. I mean, there's the big spiritual movement. There's Eckhart Tolle, who does it one way. There was, you know, Wayne Dyer. There's, Abraham Hicks. And they all do it their own way in this kind of woo-woo, I say, not fanciful, that they acknowledge the spiritual. So I'm not a deist. I'm more spiritual. I know there's something there. However, the damage I think that religion does
far exceeds.
But do I see people that embrace it are good people and they feel like they live honorable lives? Yeah. Can I say that's a bad thing? Right. It's the radicals that make it bad for anyone else. But it's the same in our society. We have rules. We have laws. And there are people that like to break them. So you're going to have that anywhere. Does it mean you throw out the baby with the bathwater? That's the question that I can't answer.
My answer is, when it comes to religion, we'd be a better society without it. And on that, we can close.
All right. All right, folks, you make your own decisions. And this is in no way makes a form that we are doing any kind of behavior or ideology. We're just having a debate here.
Absolutely.
Or just questioning deism and atheism, right?
No belief system that's tries to do good is bad, and no lack of a belief system that says things are still good is good. In other words, believe what you want. I'm just giving my point of view.
All right.
Mark. Okay.
Yeah, great. Good conversation, Michael. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks.